This is RSVNB Update, episode 616, recorded Thursday, April 27th, 2017. Yadi-da-di-da and ding-ding-ding. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSBNB Update. Sirion and myself are here this week for one last time with Sirion as co-host for the quarter.
Yeah, it's going to get a bit emotional, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you haven't been here for like 6 years or anything like that, and you don't have that kind of attachment to the show like some of the other co-hosts did.
Maybe all our listeners will get really emotional.
Maybe. And I have a distinct feeling that there's going to be an opportunity in the future for listeners to fill in for a month of RSBNB Update later this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's the way we like to do things, distributed and whatnot. So. The Spring Fair. This update feels a lot like the beach, doesn't it?
It does a bit. It's a bit less sunny.
Yeah.
Also, I can guarantee that is not how spring looks in the UK. It's wet and rainy and grim outside.
Yeah, and grey probably. Not colourful yet.
Not at all. No, we had a week of that like 2 weeks ago, but now it's all back to what you would expect from London.
Yeah, And I mean, it is spring here, and it's been spring here for a month in Alberta, but in the past 2 weeks, we've had two large dumps of snow.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's possible for, you know, any month of the year, except for July, probably, depending on where you are. That just comes with the territory. But, it certainly is spring calendar-wise, and JIX is promoting spring with the Spring Fair. So, basically, this will look like it's kind of set up like the beach, but it's not the beach. And you get a certain number of tokens to spend per day at the fair, and you can use them to take part in the various activities. One of the first ones that you can do is a fortune teller. You don't really get anything from this except a chance to collect all 17 fortunes, and it does cost you tokens to do this, and you get no XP for this one. So, use your tokens wisely. Hook a duck, which is for hunter experience. Didn't we have hook a duck in the beach, I think?
Yeah, I think some of the activities are pretty much copied from the beach, which makes sense because it's easier to make, of course.
Yeah. Then we got the helter skelter slide, which I believe gives constitution experience.
Mm-hmm.
The bucking brew. I don't recall what XP that is. I'm thinking maybe agility. If I remember correctly, I don't remember exactly what it was when I was there.
It might be strength, actually.
No, that was the hammer thing where you hammer the thing and hit the bell.
let me look this up then.
Yeah,
because we have an agility lap there. That will
Right, the agility funhouse. True, very true. The bucking brew gives you defense XP.
That makes sense, actually.
Pickaxe wanging, they say. Not instead of wrangling, that's an interesting term. Toss the pickaxe at the runet rocks and see how accurate you are. So obviously, this is for mining. Okay. It's kind of like those situations where you would throw an axe and try and get it to stick inside of a log. That was fun. The fortune teller. Basically, do this skill related to the fortune, and you get a chunk of XP for that. Test of strength. So you hit the bell, and you basically got to... your character does an animation. It swings a hammer, and little thing goes up and hits the bell, and yadi-da-di-da, and ding-ding-ding, and away we go. Agility Funhouse, as you said, is basically a compressed agility course that you get some agility XP from. Easter Egg Shy, which is for ranged experience. You choose a weapon, either ball, cabbage, or chinchampa, in an effort to try and hit the Easter eggs, and then you get some ranged XP from it. And then there are a few candy floss machines that allow you to weave candy floss and get cooking XP. And then finally, there's a dancing station where you get prayer experience of all things.
I had to laugh so hard when I read that. It didn't make a lot of sense, I think.
Yeah, that was a little bit odd, wasn't it? So, I mean, you have this thing set up that's pretty much using the same interface as Saren Stones, except, oh, okay.
Maybe they were too lazy. Oh, no, Saren Stones. No, the dance agility poles you're talking about.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Thank you.
That gives agility XP.
Yeah. There's also festive egg hunt that can be done around the fair. You get eggs that are colored nicely. They don't do anything aside from just looking nice. And once you complete all of them, you get the fairest of them all title.
So you also need to talk to all NPCs for that, I think, and unlock all the rewards or something.
And then that's when we get to the point where you're not going to be able to unlock all the rewards without spending rune coins, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Which is entirely different from the way that the beach worked, I believe. So, or no, there was sunscreen on the beach that you could get from Treasure Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to start off with what I like about this update, and I think that it's easy to sum up in saying that some of the activities certainly feel spring-like, and some of them feel as though they're copies from the beach, which is fine, because, I mean, we're in a in-between expansion period right now, and we're going to have condensed updates like this. The thing that kind of bothered me about this update is that it just came with a feeling of ambivalence, because this is a community event, obviously, and I think it's good to do these. I'm not saying it's not good to do them, but at the same time, this kind of goes with what you say, that there's a feeling that there should always be an update every week.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, on the other hand, if we would just have patch notes and whatnot, and I think some people would be okay with that, but others wouldn't. So, I don't know. It just didn't feel as though there was a reason to go to the beach, because it just felt like filler content. To the fair, because it just felt like filler content for me.
I think there's more to this update than that.
Okay.
I mean, the beach has been pretty successful. It was a pretty popular update, I think, in both years. A lot of people made use of it, and I think they were sort of trying to replicate that success into a different event.
Right.
And whether that is to fill a gap in time or another reason entirely, we can speculate, but we won't know for sure. But like, I think the main idea was, let's take the beach and let's take out the core that was so successful and put a new theme around it. In the process, they did make some changes. So if you have been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that I'm really a big opponent against this whole attitude of that there's a list of tasks you have to do every day. Like, if there's this event, we have to gather 1,000 tokens every day to, like, unlock rewards. I don't like that, because it's sort of, I don't know, for me, that doesn't have to be events all the time that make me do one thing. And the beach was something where you could fill your thermometer with temperature, like, 3 times, I think, mm-hmm. or 4 times. And if you wanted to do that, because the ice, you had the ice cream for that. That wasn't the issue. So if you wanted to do that, that would maybe be like 2 hours a day. So that's a big, big chunk of your gameplay. And you wouldn't have a lot of time to do anything else. And what they sort of tried to achieve here is to make this more like a bite-sized thing, I think. Something you can do on the side. You can add to your daily run. some of the activities cost like 10 tokens each, or you do them 10 times and that's it. And I don't mind that too much. Like, I'm going to be honest, none of these activities really give me experience that I want. So I've been using the Claudia machine.
Yep, same.
So I've been using the Claudia machine because it's like 50 tokens, but it gets like...
cash bags, dungeoneering points.
Yeah, so lamps. And lamps and that kind of stuff. So that's fine by me. And it gives you some golden tickets. But yeah, it is more bite-sized. And it seems that Jagex was going for that. And it also seems that the community was not looking for that. And, that caused a whole load of player feedback, which we'll probably talk about in a bit. But otherwise, I think what is very different from the beach as well is that there's too many activities.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, in the beach, there were a lot still, but there were like maybe five or so, which means there's always a few players around. While here, the combination of the fact that people spend a lot less time in the spring fair than on the beach, plus that they're way more spread out because it's like, 10, 12 activities, means it's not really a community event. You're almost like, when I was there, I've maybe seen two or three other people around the place.
That's right.
It. So I don't know. It does look like they experimented with the balance, and I appreciate that they do that because I definitely think that it's not the right thing to stick with one thing that works and just go with it all the time, because I definitely think there can be improvements and that there are different players who want different things. But there seem to be some issues with the balancing here.
Yeah, because I mean, if it was balanced properly, there would be people here using it more often than they are using it currently, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to do this bite-sized content that people spend only a couple of minutes a day doing, and then have also players there, which means you have to focus them in certain time slots. And then you get things like sinkholes that happen once an hour, which is also not what people want. So It's a hard trade-off. I don't know. The point is, the whole theme of the Spring Fair is like a bit of a social thing where you expect a crowd. So thematically, it feels a bit like a ghost fair in a way, that there's almost nobody there. It would have been a lot more fun if there were a lot more people around with the opportunity for community events. Like, the bite-sized content is something they could do as well, but then they probably should have also changed the formula of the number of activities and maybe even the entire theme around it and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that they do have for this, that these are entirely JMOD activated, but they're calling them happy hours. You get more XP, and certain activities cost no tokens at happy hour. And
we had those for the beach as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. And basically, these are on set worlds, and they happen every week. Not on the weekends. They only happen once on the weekend. So, you know, that also is a limiting factor, is that when this update was first posted, the amount of happy hours that they had really weren't enough. So they had to add more here to them. Currently, Monday through Friday on the English worlds, 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, and 88, happy hours happen between 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. game time, 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. game time, 2 p.m. and 3 p.m. game time, and 9 p.m. and 10 p.m. game time. And on Monday, May 1st, which is a bank holiday, happy hour happens on the English weekend time slot, which is 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. game time. So there's only one happy hour on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Do you think the happy hours are a good way of stimulating activity around this, or is that just a symptom of the larger problem?
I mean, it's a hard question. I do get the idea for happy hours, and I think people are using them. So, I mean, it's working, and I don't think there are bad ideas, but
yeah, they're definitely good.
I just don't like time-gated content.
Yeah,
by default.
And, you know, I had an idea about this, and I think it would have been a great way of going through this and, you know, spurring more community involvement is, you know, rather than just relying on J-Mods to start these happy hours up, what you do is you give clans in the game, based on how long they've been around and how many members they have, a certain number of happy hours that they can activate whenever they want, with a specific amount of time in between, say a minimum of 6 hours. So if a clan wanted to do, say, a weekend with, you know, entirely chocked full of happy hours, they could do that and activate that for anyone in their clan. I think that would be another good way of stimulating some activity around this, is let the community and not just the J-Mods activate happy hour.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a piece of feedback or criticism even that I always have about these events, is that since a year or two, I think that Jerry's has really been taking, like, pulling these event organization responsibilities to themselves, which sort of puts the people, like all the player moderators and the volunteers who do their own stuff, at a disadvantage. Like, if a JMOT wants to put an event, they just put one of these scaling obelisks there, and people will come because of the free experience. And I think that sort of put the whole event, like, people's expectations for events, pushed it in the wrong direction.
Yep.
And yep. While I agree that this is, like, the happy hours are a good idea, you are still pulling people in with the expectancy of more experience, but there's also the community factor, and I don't know how many people would go there for the community factor. The only good thing that comes out of it is that the sort of social aspect sort of evolves anyway, but I don't know, it's not something they should do by rule. And if they design a piece of content and have to rely on events like this to make it social, I think they should go back to the content and redesign it.
I think that's the true story of this here, because, you know, we really didn't have that problem with the beach, and we really didn't have the problem with the winter ski area and the crater, two Christmases ago. And mm-hmm. those were pretty great events. And mm-hmm. I think that the fact it's bite-sized and less XP, people are coming and going faster. And, you know, that's ultimately causing the need to bring people in with events. And, you know, JX has ways to see where people are, and they can, you know, look at various worlds and see what's happening. So they'll have all the metrics on this. And, you know, I assume that they'll be wanting to make this successful in the future by making those changes. So
it is sort of saddening, because I've been asking for this bite-sized content, and I do think there's a place for that.
I just
the execution has to be different if you want to do that kind of stuff. And I'm sort of afraid they will look at the metrics and be like, okay, bite size doesn't work, let's throw that out completely. And I'm really hoping that they will keep the idea of bite size content in, like, within the company, and they will do future experiments with it, but just slightly adjust the formula. Like, look at ports, for example, right? That's a piece of permanent content, but it's bite-sized. It's something you can do every day. It's not social, but, I mean, it takes a couple of minutes of time, but it adds, like, a whole new thing of stuff. If you can do...
And hey, it led to the arc.
It led to the arc, and it's... I think most people like it, if not for the money, then at least for, like, the management aspect of it. So,
oh yeah, ports was great, because, you know, basically with time investment, free tier 85 tank armor.
Mm-hmm. So, like, there's definitely room for bite-sized content like that, and I admit it's going to be really hard to make that social, or maybe we should not make it social, but I think there should be room for that as well. And yeah, it's difficult. There's a whole range of things you can do, but this sort of falls between the two things, and that's sort of where it ended up going wrong.
Yeah, and, you know, aside from these issues, there were a couple of other things that they did have to make, changes they had to make with this. They increased the happy hours per day. The numbers I listed were the modified amount. Happy hours are now available on 6 worlds instead of 4. And the daily tickets you receive, or the tickets you receive from doing events, was increased by a factor of 6.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you think about it, that says a lot, balancing-wise, when you have to increase something by a factor of 6 to...
I think the last time we saw such a big balancing change was Invention.
That's right. That's right. Because the rewards for this are as follows. You are not going to complete this without purchasing extra tokens or tickets with rune coins. At least I don't think so. If you can now, you definitely couldn't before.
Yeah, so I think the news post actually says it's now possible to get all the rewards with a bit of extra, like you can miss a few days maybe, but all like it is possible to get all of them now.
Right. So rewards are a pickaxe hat token, a crystal ball token. These, of course, tokens are redeemable for cosmetics. The fortune cape token, the mallet token, a hypnotic parasol token, and a Zoltan pet token. That's from one of the reward shops. There's 3 different reward shops where you can purchase from, and each one of them basically gives it to you in token form, and then you can redeem it later. I'm assuming
or you can trade it.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, there's going to be an interesting market, I think, going forward.
It's the same as the beach, right? Like, you could get beach emotes by doing stuff on the beach. You didn't buy them. You could get them through stuff, and you could sell them.
And that was pretty rare if you could get them by just doing stuff and not doing that. So I'm assuming they kept that mechanic around. There's also another reward shop. Priesleek, I believe, allows you to buy a yak balloon or a yak plushie. And of course, those of you guys who have toured the merch shop will know you can actually purchase a real-life yak plushie if that's your thing. So
I might have to.
Yeah, I mean, purchase it in-game if you can't purchase it in real life, right?
Yeah.
You can also
might have to get the real-life one, actually.
Really? I never imagined you as a plushie kind of person.
Not really, but yaks, come on.
You could also purchase the dance emotes that you use when you're getting prayer XP, the test of strength emote, which of course comes from the strength side of the event, and a bucking yak teleport token, which of course is referring to the defense side of the event. That one might be kind of comical to get and surprise people with a year or so down the line when people forget about this. And finally, there's a contact juggling resting token. So basically, you'll be juggling when you're resting. I know a few people who would like that. So from one day and probably half a day here, I managed to get 306 tokens from just doing everything. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, tickets, sorry. So it is possible to do that. And imagine if I wasn't doing that, you'd divide that number by 6 and you'd see how much I'd be limited by, right? So
what are the best activities to do for tickets then? Because Claudia definitely isn't.
Yeah. You know, I think the ones that I got the best reward from would be the ones that are quick and repetitive. So the mining one, the hunting one, and the ranged one.
Okay.
That's the sense that I got. You could probably also do strength if you wanted to get some strength XP or the bucking bronco. But, you know, the Claudia one, I don't know. That one's kind of tempting, isn't it, to do? Because you use 50 of your tokens each day and you get those coin boxes. And
I've been doing it so far because I don't need the experience. But like, yeah. I sort of want the rewards. But then I'm tempted to just buy them from the GE and get on and do my own stuff. I might just check prices. They usually drop towards the end of the event.
Which of these of ones I mentioned would you feel that you have to get? Like, I mean, maybe the emotes and the bucking yak for me.
I'm all over like the resting animation, so I'm definitely gonna get that. The emotes. I like emotes. The teleport, I don't really care. I don't like teleports that are big.
Yeah, and some of them take longer, too.
I doubt it. Home teleport should all be the same.
It feels like some of them take longer. Maybe it's just the way they're animated. I don't know. But
yeah. And then the Yak plushie, of course. I have to get that. I will never wear it.
Mm. You know, if anyone wants, you can send Sirion a Yak plushie in real life, and I'm sure he will be very happy.
Yeah.
You could just put it on your shelf next to your computer or something like that you play RS with and say, oh, that's my symbol of RuneScape, and that's next to all my other little collection things, right?
I don't have a lot of collection things here, actually. They're all in a box at my parents'.
Aw, too bad.
<It's good. sighs>
So, they also changed stuff in addition to the... Or no, they didn't change the XP, sorry. But this was all in relation to community feedback, and I actually wanted to quote a bit from this news post that came from Mod Salen, I believe. That's the way to pronounce that. So they basically looked at the feedback and the amount of data coming in over the first 24 hours of the Spring Fair and came to the conclusion that, it wasn't well received by players. And, quote, if we're being honest, the balancing isn't entirely at a place where we would have liked it to be. This isn't any one particular person's fault. It was an oversight before launch and one we intend to fix. With our recent updates and events, Birth by Fire, Beach 2.0, Elite Skilling Outfits in-game, etc., we wanted to move into a situation that allows people to use their time and still get the same reward from what was being offered. We share your feelings on the Spring Fair in this respect. It missed the mark. Additionally, we intended to fall back on happy hours to ensure that players felt like they could be getting the most out of the fair. As these have to be manually activated by JMods, we had to consider that when planning the schedule, which has left it in times that aren't ideal for everyone, including some fully packed worlds that block people from accessing them. So Jagex fully admits that this was a balancing issue on their side, and I think to a large degree the ticket change and the happy hour change largely fixed this. And maybe, I think, looking at it with fresh eyes and just going there and doing some of the bite-sized content to see how quick you can earn those tokens is probably the way to go for this. And, I mean, the only issue I think remains is the two issues that we identified is that, one, it doesn't feel like a community event because people come and go too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And two, maybe this just being so bite-sized in scope, it doesn't have the same draw that the beach or the winter event two Christmases ago did in the crater. So it just needs to bring people in. And if it can do that, this might be a new template for one of these events. But I think at the same time, with all the events we've been discussing recently, we don't want to do... have events that are ultimately looking the same, right? Mm-hmm. And JX even said this year they didn't want to do a copy paste of the beach. So,
and I appreciate that a lot. Like, we need to go to this place where they don't just take successful content and repeat it, because that gets boring over time.
Yep, and you know, that's the exact same feeling I was having before coming into this episode, and you know, reading up the Jagex post about the changes being made to this, and I can say that it's not as mind-numbing as one might expect after these changes have been made. So that's good, and for that I'm really happy.
I mean, I think part of the player feedback also came from the fact that it felt very, very focused on microtransactions. Like, the beach had microtransactions, but because you could enjoy the content for such a long time without ever throwing money at it, like real life money, and this felt like you did it quickly in a couple of minutes and then they wanted money, felt really money grabbery. And then there is and the theme is not helping, right? Because you get tickets at a real life fair as well, and if you want to do more, you have to throw money at it. So the theming was not helping either. And then you have these So you have this Chin Chomper outfit you can get. You get like a card with, I don't know, 25 tiles or so. You can unlock one of them per day. And then if you're lucky, you get a part of the outfit. And if you're not, well, bad luck. Which means you have to buy a bond to get all the tiles and get the entire outfit. And I mean, this is just two examples, but the microtransactions are a lot more present in this than in the beach. And because the ticket mechanic is so much more explicit than the temperature in the beach, it's way more obvious that you're using a limited supply of things and you can get more by using real life money. And I think that sort of sent off the wrong message, especially with Jack now saying this is totally not what we wanted. We wanted everybody to be able to get all the content without paying money for it. So it gave up the entire wrong message. And yeah, I mean, it's good that Jagger's apologized for it, but the harm might already have been done, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't read feedback on these updates before they happen. But
no.
The news posting on this felt bite-sized enough that I felt, okay, this is going to be a copy of the beach. Do I have to do something that feels like it's a copy and paste of this? And, you know, until you actually get there, that's what you are going to expect. And that's a bit of a problem, I think, for the selling of this update, because once you get there, that's not the case. So, you know, it also comes down to presentation like that. But at the core of it, once you get there, I think it's a good update. What do you think?
I'm not convinced either way, but the way they did the music sort of convinces me that this is actually amazing.
Oh, so, I didn't have the music on. What does it sound like?
If I'm correct, it's actually the newbie melody, but sort of fair themed. But like, it has the newbie melody in there, so it's pure nostalgia.
I will have to have a look at that.
Yeah, it's really fun. Like, you don't really recognize it at first, but then the very like typical bit comes and you're like, oh, that's what they're doing with the music. So lots of creativity going on there, and just the characters they put in, and each of the characters has his own little character. I don't know how I feel about putting a player in. I mean, sort of breaks the immersion a bit, I feel, but I mean, I read the comics of Fez League. They're amazing. So it's deserved that they get a spot in the game. But yeah, all in all, I think they did very well, and I just got to applaud Jagex for trying to do things a bit different and admit their mistakes when it doesn't.
And for me, that's what turned this update around, is the fact that they were transparent with this, they fixed it quickly, and it's actually not too bad now that it's been adjusted.
I remember a very recent update where we asked Jagex to be open and apologetic about, but they didn't.
And here we go, we got that.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, we'll get to that when we get to the patch notes.
That's right. Alrighty, well, there's the Spring Fair. I believe, how long is this in game for? It didn't say.
4 weeks.
4 weeks, alright. Yeah, that's a good amount.
Also, I've heard, so.
And, you know, based on the fact that this looks like a copy and paste of the beach at the beginning, there was some debate about whether it was going to be actually replacing the beach. I wasn't able to find one way or the other with that, but given the messaging that Jagex has since put out about this and not wanting it to be a copy and paste, I would say that the beach is probably still on for this summer. So
yeah, I mean, we got Manifest and a huge, huge summer thing, but
right.
I'm sort of assuming they will put it towards the end of summer again, like last year. So
right.
I expect to see this
in the August September area when it's starting to frost over here. Alrighty, well, there's the Spring Fair. Not too bad once you break it apart. So, tweaks and fixes, patch notes this week.
Oh boy, was I looking forward to this.
Yeah, and I'm going to start off this set of patch notes by completely going through the quests, challenges, and achievements section of the patch notes. And you guys tell me what's copiously missing. Clan achievements now give the correct pop-up and message. Skeletal wishes now display a pop-up. Players can now consistently complete the Mauritania achievement gate Spectrations task. Players can now correctly complete the Tyrannan achievement Disco Impling. Lurgan's Run now gives a pop-up on completion. All quests have been updated to no longer display a blank task complete pop-up on completion. Players can now boost their stats to complete wilderness achievements. Note, the requirements must be met through every step of the achievement.
Shane, didn't you miss a bit? Like, something about a completely broken interface?
Yeah, that's not even here. That's not even here.
Wait, what? You didn't accidentally skip over it?
No, in fact, there's only 4, 6, yeah, and a bunch of other notes from last week here. There's only 7 other bullet points on this week's patch notes.
I don't know. I mean, I don't follow Jagex forums or Reddit or whatever Jagex JMods use to communicate, but I have seen no confirmation of them saying there are problems, we're going to fix it. And that makes me really, really worried. Like, we're now 1.5 weeks in, and the interface is problematic as it was at the start, and there's no sign that this will be fixed.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I guess worst case, they might bring out some fixes when they release Manifolds, which will be using the task interface, just like they did. Just like they did a bunch of fixes to the group system when Raids and Tusca came out. So we can hope, but if I have to deal with this interface for over another month, especially in a place where, because I did all the skills, that interface is sort of the center of my user experience, because that's what it's going to decide what I'm going to do next.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not just us. Other people have complained about this, and it's really bad for people on new accounts, believe me.
Yeah. So I'm going to do a shout-out to the Informer article Tanner's made last week that dove into the achievement system and really, I think, explained really well why it is something we needed and why, in principle, it's really good. But the usability is so horrible that this needs to be fixed. So, yeah. I was disappointed the second week in a row.
Perhaps it's time to start a write-in campaign.
Perhaps. But I feel that the least we deserve is it's some communication about this. And this might be something that has to do with what team you're dealing with within Jagex. Because for this update, they were completely transparent and were really quick at responding to feedback, explaining what was wrong. Well, for the achievement system last week, we heard nothing. So I feel they should work on their communication standards and sort of bring that up around the entire team.
Yep, that'd be great. And I mean, there's no stickies. There's nothing in recent updates. The only sticky here is for the spring fair changes. So I don't know. Perhaps it's time to lodge a complaint about this week's update on the confidential feedback thread for April 24th. Just to get that out there. And of course, if you do that, folks, be civil. Be civil. That's always the number one rule when lodging feedback, specifically regarding software.
We came off quite negative last week, I think. And maybe again this week. And I don't want to bash Jagex for doing this update, because I definitely think it was needed, but if you put out updates at this quality, I think it's important to let it be known to them that we don't want half-hearted updates and that this is not the quality we expect from them and that they can do better. And we can do that in a very constructive way by giving them suggestions on what to work on first.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're trying to achieve with this podcast as well. And I hope that this community will
do that. Like, for example, if you Google RuneScape Achievement System Fixes, the first result is a forum thread from the official forums. And there's no JMod reply on it. And then there's another thread that's also there. It does have a reply. And these are referring to not being able to complete specific tasks, and that is the only thing that has a reply on it. So
I mean, those things were fixed, and those are more important, arguably, than usability fixes.
Yeah, of course.
But like, communicate with your player base. Let them know that you take these things seriously, because right now it feels that this update has been dropped.
Oh,
it's
oh
out
boy.
There now.
Yeah, we're in the know about this actually, because Tanis's Informer article in last week's podcast are results number 4 and 5 on Google for this.
Neat.
Okay.
All right.
I had no idea we were setting opinion like that, but... Anyways, also for achievements this week, Adamant and... I'm sorry, not achievements. Fixes. Patch notes. Adamant Dragons and Rune Dragons now have the luck system applied to them.
Yeah, that feels a bit like an oversight, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, eh? Oh, that's pretty funny. Alrighty.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we got for the patch notes this week. Ready to move on to the next huge thing that's going to happen to RuneScape?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, let's hope for the best. Menaphos launches June 5th, and to commemorate that, Jagex has announced that a double XP weekend will be happening on May 19th in order to get people into Menaphos, which has the requirements of level 85 Slayer and a bunch of level 50s. So
that's just to do all the content. I think the minimum requirements are as low as just finishing the desert quests. Stolen Hearts and Diamond in the Rough, and of course be a member. So you can get into Menaphos pretty much by just doing 2 novice quests, but you won't be able to do all the content.
And they even have set up a specific microsite for Menaphos, showing off some of the graphics and what we can expect to see there. We have a trailer on the website, a sign up for email updates so you can sign up and get notified when things happen on here. We also have some lore, story and requirements, Pharaoh character update, and the media gallery. Let's see what story and requirements says. Like, they're This website is absolutely huge, and I think the fact that they are showcasing certain aspects of Menaphos by creating a website like this kind of shows the new expansion methodology for Jagex. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, this is the kind of thing you would expect from actual paid expansions, not the game, right?
That's right.
So, I mean, that's what we're going to head towards, and that's the size they want to reach. Knowing the update schedule of Jagex, I'm not entirely sure how I feel about them announcing a release date, because now it's going to come out whether it's ready or not, and I'm not sure how well it has worked in the past. But yeah, let's hope for the best, and they seem to be taking this serious, and the production quality up to this, like, so far, it looks really high.
Yeah, because you know, if it flops or if there's major issues with it, that's going to definitely paint them in a bad way. So it can't. It honestly can't. For a company that has corporately rebranded recently, that is a huge no-no.
Yeah. Like, basically, if that happens, the shithole is going to actually turn into a shithole.
Very well said. Very well said. And, you know, there's so much hype building for this with 120 Slayer coming and, you know, everything associated with it that, you know, I am going to go out on a limb here and I'm going to say that it's going to be implemented properly and that's going to go over well. And on June 5th, we're all going to be happy campers.
Yeah, sure. Let's be optimistic. And talk about being optimistic. I hope there's still the chance that they say, you know, 120 Slayer, forget about it. We're not doing it.
Oh, I think that ship has set sail a long time ago. in the same boat that decided the Ark was coming for content.
Oh.
Yeah, and also, they're calling themselves the Menafos Insiders, so this is handful of players early access. So basically, it's a bit of an experiment, and the group will be fed information about the Golden City and other content which will make its way into the game with the Menafos expansion. The information they will receive will be exclusive to them, and we won't be sharing them this outside of the group. However, the Menafos Insider will be able to share this information with you. They can disseminate the information we supply however they like. It's all in their hands.
This is interesting. So this feels a bit like a social experiment, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
I wasn't sure what to make of it at the beginning. I sort of briefly read through this and only sort of got the part that was like, we're going to give information to people and they can share it however they want. And I felt like, what use does it have? Are they trying to see what mass they, like what, yeah, what, how large the group of people has to be before things start leaking? But then the idea is that things do leak. So what exactly is the point of having this limited to a number of players? And why wouldn't you then instead disperse the information to fan sites and have them spread it? Because that would be good for everybody.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, then I read into like the social experiment thing. And I'm like, that is kind of interesting. But I think the most likely result also is that somebody will just go in there, copy everything that's being said, and just like paste it verbatim on Reddit. That's going to happen, right?
Yeah, definitely. And
when it's on Reddit, it's public knowledge. And I don't know. I feel most things these days are spread through Reddit. Like, we don't like it, but if you look at Reddit, things like PSAs, JMOD tweets, teasers, you can, everything is on Reddit. So this is going to go on Reddit as well, and it's going to be out there, and it's going to spread anyway. So I don't think it's a particularly interesting experiment, but maybe we'll find some interesting results. But I'm not entirely sure what the ultimate goal behind this is. Maybe they try to see what happens if they give out little bits of information, how they transform. That might be interesting,
maybe,
because we have talked about that in the past, right?
Yeah.
Where the behind-the-scenes articles sort of hyped up updates or pushed them in the wrong direction because of the expectations being given. And maybe they're now sort of making a more controlled environment to see what happens if you give people incomplete information and make that spread and run naturally. And
they're also asking for Discord name.
Yeah, because the information will be spread through a Discord channel.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm signing up. I think we all should, actually.
I don't know if I'm signing up, to be honest. I've been trying to avoid a lot of information about Menafos. I just want to go in there and explore it. And yeah.
All right.
That's my take on it.
Oh, whoa. What is your Twitter handle? How many followers do you have on this profile?
Well, there you go. It's a social experiment, all right.
Yep. Yeah. That's
also information they don't, I don't particularly fancy sharing anyway, so.
Yeah, that's right. What is your Reddit username? What is your Instagram username? How many Instagram followers do you have? Do you have a Tumblr? How many Tumblr followers?
Who has Tumblr these days?
People who create and consume pornographic material? I mean, that's what Tumblr is all for these days. I mean, I don't have personal experience with that, but that's what happens. Believe me. Tumblr is the number...
I thought it was mostly used for like your fan fictions and that kind of stuff.
Well, that's...
Like, and then the fan fiction, the shady area, that is.
that's probably erotic fan fictions on Tumblr, given the stuff that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Though, I mean, that's the way it is. So,
well, good for them.
And then finally, I agree that JX might share my public profiles with players if I become a Menafos insider.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. Okay, this is pretty shady.
Huh.
Yeah, no. You just discouraged me to do this pretty big time.
Well,
on the show.
I mean, I don't see, like, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm going to get all the Informer people to sign up because I think that's something that we need to do.
Are they going to be on Reddit like, hey, this person has information, you better harass them to, like, expose it? Is that what they're going to do?
Maybe.
I mean, I don't want to be in that position.
Just think of the publicity you could bring to Clan Quest.
You mean I should sign up with the Clan Quest data?
I signed up with the RSBNB data.
I suppose I could do that. We have like 5 followers, don't we?
We have 850, but...
Oh, well done.
Yeah. All right.
We should get 850 if we are chosen.
Yeah, well, there you go. See? And I think it's a very interesting thing. And, you know, back when Priftinus came out, concept art of these kind of updates was fed to fan sites directly via the fan site mailbox. But as we talked about previously on the show, that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, and this would have been a great opportunity.
Yep, indeed. So, I've signed up for being a Menafos insider. Be interesting to have someone who works with us on the podcast be one of those, so that might be something else we're hiring for an RSBNB update. But
I will see if I can get Clan Quest to sign up, and yeah.
Indeed. All right, well, ready to give some more input to Jagex?
Maybe.
Mod Raven is working on a tap project, which is their passion projects, essentially, and he is working on a bit of a rework for the Empyrean Citadel. So you guys might remember that the Empyrean Citadel used to belong to Armadil, but that is the place where Sliske started his game in Missing Presumed Death, and that place is abandoned now after Sliske's endgame and all of the previous quests. So this week, Mont Raven wants input on what's happening with the Empyrean Citadel. And now, of course, because this is a passion project of Mod Raven, it's not guaranteed to make it into game at any point, if at all. It's just something he's working on the side. But the idea behind this is to do something with the Empyrean Citadel following the end results of Sliske's endgame. And some people have suggested that Armadil should reclaim the Empyrean Citadel, so he's wondering what exactly should happen with this. And some ideas that he floats around are, should it be a social space where Armadilians can gather together and debate issues of morality and justice? Should it be a place of quiet contemplation? Or should it be a raucous avian party? No, there's also going to be no new graphics, no rite of passage quest. There can be lore,
aww,
and it can be definitely niche. So,
no rite of passage quest. That
yeah, I was
sad.
Hoping for that, the Big Bird quest. You know, everyone had suggested, oh, let's have a National Geographic special on how birds are created and all that. But anyways, that's what people thought. Rite of passage would end up being like, but in any case, these are the options that can go forward for this. I think that they should. I think it should just be left empty.
I don't know. It feels like a waste to just leave it empty. It's probably going to end up something. But what I don't know it. Citadels are a bit weird, but what would be nice is if it slowly is taken over by nature, that could be cool. And that could in the future then spawn possible new content or scaling locations in the future. I think that would be interesting.
All right. I don't know. I think leaving it blank is probably the best way. Quiet contemplation, because I think we all know after that quest that there's certain things that have happened there, and Sliske is not dead.
Can we turn that into a POH?
Oh, that'd be an interesting idea. Be a very, very interesting idea. Very, very interesting.
I mean, nobody's using it, and we are part Sliske apparently now, so... I don't know. It's ours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds good. All righty. Next up, the third age of Jagex. Moving to an external source now to talk about Jagex the company. A little bit ominous. The third age of Jagex. So... this is an interview with the new CEO, or acting CEO, rather, Phil Mansell, a.k.a. Mott Pips. And he goes through the various stages that Jagex existed in. Of course, the first stage being run by Andrew and Paul Gower, who, of course, got the game off the ground. And then the second age being the venture capitalists coming in and investing in the company and efforts to find their next major game. And that's when we had projects like Transformers Universe and Mechscape that ultimately didn't get very far. And then the third age, which they say we're in now, is a focus on RuneScape, and they want to do it really well, and that's what their parent company wants from them. They also want to create new games with the RuneScape intellectual property and maybe expand into other franchises if they get a great idea.
I mean, this is sort of what we have been seeing and what seems to be happening, and it sort of verifies our suspicions that the RuneScape IP is going to be what they're going to be focused on in the next few years. So,
yeah, and I don't think we predicted something that on the show here with that. So,
So the article is not very shocking. It's just a pretty deep dive into the history of RuneScape and the ideas behind, or Jagex rather, and how they're looking at their future right now. And well,
and it looks great.
Yeah, I mean, RuneScape is the thing that did well in the past, and they're good at it. So I think they made the right choice, and I've been supportive of it so far. I mean, I think Chronicles is a great product. Let's not talk about Idle Adventures. And I mean, the Alexa thing is a bit niche maybe, but like if that's the kind of stuff you're going to get in the future, I mean, I'm all for it. And yeah.
Yeah. And this really goes into some of the discussions and thoughts that went on when they got acquired by the Chinese company. And, you know, people were they addressed the question, you know, you just got purchased by a Chinese company. Are you guys okay? And, Mott Pips here says, you know, it was actually a really great thing because they got much the same vision and outlook for what they want Jagex to be. So it was a good fit, according to Mott Pips here. And basically, this company wanted, or the company that acquired them, wanted a firm in the West who could expand their influence out, which is what Jagex is doing. And Jagex wanted to expand into that Chinese market as well. So it was very, very beneficial to both parties here. And Jagex gets to remain full creative control of what's happening with RuneScape here. And they get to focus on what works, which is what I think is the most important thing at this stage. So
I think this is going to be a pivot in like Jagex history, like this acquisition, and I think it has led to lots of positive things. So, yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, I think as much as we don't want to talk about it, and some people like to ignore this fact, is that, you know, they're focusing on old school as a separate product. Well, they're saying that this is something we have done great, so let's treat it as a separate product. And that in itself... is ultimately a success for the RuneScape property, I think. And that is something that everybody should be happy about.
Mm-hmm.
And that might sound like a defense of old school, but at the end of the day, if there's no one playing Jagex games, then there's no money coming in, and Jagex is in question as a company. So mm-hmm. it definitely is a positive thing all around. But if you guys want to give a read to this full article, you can find it online. It's at Game Industry Biz, but the full link will be in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Okay, so just a couple of small things before we wrap up the RS section this week. We do have some numbers on the current amount of skill pets that have been released in-game as of April 20th. They didn't include all of the skills here, but unsurprisingly, the most is fishing with 37,391 pets, followed by divination at 30,810, and then the third highest is woodcutting at 28,917. Farming is also up there with 21,503. Herb lore has 10,759. Construction has a really small amount of 4,262. So... and of course, I think that makes sense because construction is definitely a skill. It's very expensive. People don't necessarily want to train it.
Especially not past 99.
Yeah.
Or 120, but yeah.
And Bernie drops will be revealed at 1 a.m. game time on the 22nd at RuneScape. And I looked for the picture showing this number, and it wasn't really there. So that was a little bit confusing. So they say at RuneScape, so maybe that's referring to one of their other channels, Twitch or YouTube, for example, but, skilling pets are definitely out there and making themselves known.
I mean, no surprises. I think the number of pets for each go.
Yeah. Obviously the ones that are trained more are going to have, more pets in the AFK skills. You could see right up there up top,
especially the ones that are related to invention.
Yeah. Alrighty. Next up, we have an update on Hazelmere's Signet Ring. And this is something that you and I talked about with the luck rework. That was rumored when that update came out and really hasn't apparently been dropped yet in-game. And they can tell that, I guess, based on a world broadcast. So as of today, this is not in-game. And Mod Timbo has actually been answering yes and no questions towards people that have been asking him about this. And the most recent revelation from Mod Timbo is that the ring is basically dropped similar to the Vecna skull, except much rarer. And you need to have the luck of the dwarves equipped in order to have it dropped. So you need the highest tiered ring. It's not available from treasure trails. Having this ring equipped would not result in another ring drop. The ring doesn't have a connection to Hazelmere. It's just named that way. He also confirmed it could be dropped in Curadel's dungeon, but being on a Slayer task is not required to receive the ring, and that a Blurberry special is not required, because there is also some cases where obscure NPCs that don't normally drop these kind of things would drop a Blurberry special. So there was some speculation if that was needed about this. And Mod Timbo has been kind of pointing people in various directions, yes or no, for the entire month of April, trying to figure out what was happening here. So, and obviously no one's got it yet, and we don't know what this ring does. So it's still a huge mystery, and this was unannounced with the luck rework, which I think we took issue with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm assuming there's going to be a huge broadcast whenever someone gets this, and it's going to appear online in the Jagex auto feed, hence why they're able to tell that as of the 27th of April, no one has received the ring.
So. I mean, maybe there is some special requirement for getting it, but if it is literally just kill monsters while wearing a Luck of the Dwarfs ring, it's just really, really rare, and it's still not dropped within a month, then it's probably a bit too rare.
Yeah. And, you know, like, is it going to have some other effect to it? Is it going to have some super stat to it that we don't know about? And
Is it tradable?
Well, it's on the Grand Exchange. There's a listing on the Grand Exchange for it. So it is going up on the Grand Exchange based on the fact people are putting in offers for it, but that doesn't mean that it has been received. So I don't know. We still feel that this is kind of a out of left field thing to do for the rare drop table and the luck update.
I still think the news post was misleading. And this is still one of these things. I don't know how easy it will be. I mean, I think the conclusion we came to is, like, in the end, it also depends on how you will end up getting this ring, like, if it's accessible or not.
Yeah. Well, we know it's not Clue Scrolls, and we know it is related to a monster drop from the rare drop table, and it's not related to Slayer. So, definitely somewhere out there. One of the mysteries of 2017. I never thought we'd be having such a huge mystery in RuneScape. Mm-hmm. Who knows? It could be a tier 5 luck ring that we weren't told about, which would be really, really annoying if we find that out, you know, 5 or 6 months after the fact.
Yeah, I mean, I think if this is going to end up being something that has really, really good bonuses or something.
Yeah, then if that's the case, that's a problem.
It's going to be a bit of a dick move because, like, only the richest people or the really, really lucky people are going to be able to get this. Which, I mean, I don't think that's the good entry point for an update. I think every content should be accessible in some way, and its price and rarity should reflect. Like, well, I mean, how do you say that? Like, it should be fair to everybody. It should not be something that you need to get to be most efficient and then be really rare like this. Like, the Luck of the Dwarves is something that is quite expensive, but it's obtainable for everybody in the end.
Yeah. Whereas, like, this, we don't know. It could just be, you know, you stand maybe on one foot and fight some Slayer monster, and there you go.
Yeah, well, like drink a blueberry special, stand on one foot, do a little dance, and kill a hellhound. I don't know.
Yeah, well, he said it wasn't related to that, so.
Maybe he has to, like, yeah.
It's going to be definitely very interesting to see what happens with this, but it will be cause for concern if it has more luck than the Luck of the Dwarves, I think.
Agreed.
All right, and next Monday is a bank holiday, so the update will land on Tuesday. The RuneScape update, that is.
That's good news for me.
Yay! All right.
It means it's a bank holiday for me next Monday.
And you get to have a nap.
I get to have a nap in the morning.
There you go. Okie dokie. So, we're going to move on to the questions right now. We got two of them this week. The first one is from Tycho, our friend Tycho in Clan Quest. At the release, the balancing of the fair was a total disaster. You mentioned earlier about the idea of Jagex either having a system or a person that could look at the product before releasing and determine the quality of it. So, one, my questions are, what positive sides, and two, what negative sides could you see by implementing this into the current release system? And third, do you think that the RS expansions will give them the opportunity to implement it?
I mean, I think the obvious negative side is that it's effort, and either you need somebody to really intensively play through all the content to really get this, which is means you need to hire a whole bunch of people, have an automated system for, like, updates like this is almost impossible technically. Like, you can't really, and even with, like, one person, like, you can't have a person play through this day after day to get the entire end-to-end experience, and that is the biggest problem with testing. Like, it's really hard to get the full experience that players get because you only have limited time to test your update. You can't give it the full time that players will be giving it because you have to also do other things.
And there's also the chance that you're not going to think like a player does, and you might not be able to break it in that certain way.
Yeah, but, like, if you are, I mean, QA testers often are sort of come in fresh, but you have to consider that if you are testing your own content, you know exactly how things work under the hood. And that was the issue with the achievement system, most likely, is that people who were using the interface knew exactly what clicking where does what. But somebody coming in fresh has no idea what the interface does and has to try it out. Like, it has to figure out by trial and error, which is a whole new experience. And that is something you have to test, which works for things like interfaces, but doesn't work for something like balancing very well. And when it comes to balancing, you probably just have to end up making a big spreadsheet, having average experience and ticket rates in there, sort of due to estimations of how many hours of gameplay are involved in playing.
Yeah. You know, I think the definite positive signs are is that if you let the players access the content through a test server, you can gauge the way they're going to react to it first and foremost. You're going to find any major bugs that you might have missed. And you're also going to be able to make tweaks faster because fewer people are going to see that and it's going to have less of a negative impact. Now, the negative sides of this are, of course, that, like you said, you need to employ people to do this potentially. Another negative side of it is that with a game like RuneScape, if you were to bring this in for an expansion, I don't think Jagex would want the content of their expansion being leaked to the public before it comes out. So they would need to have strict non-disclosure agreements set up with the testers saying that, okay, you can't reveal what you see on this test server, but we want you to playtest the update. And, you know, to an extent that they have done some of these things, they have brought players into Jagex to play test certain updates and whatnot. I think one of them was actually Next Angel of Death and a few of the
other
ones.
I think for Manifolds, they're actually getting people in as well.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think that's a good way of doing it. It's just really unfortunate that it's going to be limited to people in the UK and it's not really transparent on who is being chosen or how someone can be chosen to do this.
Because of the NDA.
That's right. But
I mean, like something like Elite Dangerous, right, has a test server that you like every time there's a big update, it comes out in that server and you can play it.
Yeah.
I mean, it works for some updates, but like, the big difference is also that RuneScape has this weekly update schedule, so it's really different. And also the nature of updates is quite different. I mean, Manifolds, yeah, you could do a test server on that before you put it out, but the updates that Jagex does are, especially the big ones, are very focused on like bringing lots of new stuff out at the same time and coming up with the best rates of experience and really this time-gated thing, like putting everything in there, like everybody in there at the same time. And if you do a test server, you sort of take it away. So RuneScape might not be a game for which this works very well, but then again, for updates like EOC or combat-related changes, this would be ideal. So, I mean, you can make it work. It just doesn't work for everything, especially something like the Spring Fair, which, I mean, it was not really a surprise update, but in a way, it's also like just something that comes out that you don't want people to play through it before and then be like, okay, now you can actually play it for 4 weeks. It doesn't really work.
Exactly. And I think that is the huge reason why we haven't seen this with RuneScape. And of course, we've seen this with RuneScape 3's new interface, the HTML5 beta, the NXT beta, the Evolution of Combat beta, knock on wood. So Jagex has done it before and it's worked with varying degrees of success. So obviously I think it comes down to what you said, the weekly release cycle. And while we would like to have the expansions and opportunity to implement something like this, I don't think it'll happen. I think the only beta that we were promised here was the banking update this year. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how they do that, if that's on the live server or if you copy your stuff over to just play with the bank. So
and about like the third question, like, do you think that RS expansions will give the opportunity to be implemented? This depends. So updates for which you can do an early access program is updates for which you are beforehand completely transparent about what you're going to implement, right? Manifold has so many secrets, you can't do an early access program for that. But let's say you're like, okay, we're going to, for expansion 2, it's going to be a complete rework of Ardoin, and we're going to work with the players to implement it, release design docs, that kind of stuff. Then you can do an early access program because all the info is out there anyway, and you can have the players really have an impact. But I think expansions, James wants to stick with this program or with this idea of that it's a bit of a secret what comes out, and it's like an even ground for everybody. But I'm hoping for other big updates like the mining and smithing rework, we might be able to get this early access program. Like the mining and smithing rework is probably the best example as something that needs a lot of testing because it's a content over such a wide range. It's really hard to test it internally. That is something you want to give access to. And Jerry's doesn't lose anything by giving people early access to mining and smithing rework because the design documents are out there already. So you don't have any secrets to really hold back. If they do want to put like some Easter eggs in, you can hold those back to put them in after the early test program is over, basically. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think the expansions per se are a good point to implement them, but I do think we have some updates coming up that might be.
That might be able to have a case like that.
Yeah, and I really hope that the bang rework is probably going to do something like that, and I'm hoping the mining and smithing rework as well.
Yes. All right. Next one is from Wolfie. Do you have any memory from the podcast that make it memorable? And when are you coming back?
Well, I think I can answer the when are you coming back for you, which is, I think, next week.
You're going to be what next week?
Oh, you are going to be next week.
Oh, yes. When I'm coming back next week. Yes. Yeah, most definitely.
When I'm coming back, I don't know. That's actually up to Shane, probably.
yeah, whenever we need you and whenever you're not tired. And, you know, the reason we don't do full year co-host anymore is because people burn out from doing the show, except for me.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, whenever Sirion wants, he is welcome to come back.
Do I have any memories from the podcast that make it memorable? That's a tough question. I mean, you get a lot of these memories in the
in the clip show. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the first time is always a bit memorable. I was super nervous, so that's that.
Really?
Yeah, I was really nervous the first time. That was Earth was still on the show then, I think.
All right.
And then there was the first RuneFest episode we did. It was like 3 hours.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, that was good fun. But that was a really enjoyable episode to record though. So, yeah, it's hard. You get these things that just build up over time. And most of them make it into the clip show. What you don't really notice in the episodes is we always have like a bit of fun before and after the show as well. And that sort of completes the experience where you just have a bit of fun. But yeah, I don't know. Do you have any memorable moments?
I think it would be the constant. I think it should be the constant running meme of the Note 7.
Yeah, it was a pretty big thing last year. And yeah.
And we did bring that up for a story this year as well with the refurbishment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's never going to leave the show. I think that's sort of ingrained now. And it's so weird that you realize that these podcasts sort of record history and that like if somebody listens back to this in 5 years, it will reflect the current state of RuneScape, but also the tech world.
And also the real world in some cases, too, because we were on recording when Brexit was passed last year.
Yeah, and I wasn't on that show, but I was on the show that was the first one that, or the, well, like a lot of space achievements have happened during the show as well. Like fairly recently, the first booster that was reused after being landed, for example. Like these milestones sort of are recorded during the show, which is weird, like realizing it, you're part of history.
Like we have the first show of President Obama, the last show of President Obama, and the first show of President Trump.
Yeah, like those, you never really realize that, like, in maybe like a century, this will all be in history books. Like, part of what happens today will be in history books, and part of that will be something you discussed during the podcast, before or after the podcast, or maybe just in real life with your friends. So, I don't know. Like, all those facts together sort of make the whole experience a bit memorable. I mean, there are definitely moments that you think that you remember, but like,
yeah,
in a way, I mean, you do it every week, so it sort of blurs in each other.
But you're right. You're entirely right. Unless someone says, well, this happened on this episode, or you remember a single defining event like that. That's the way it works normally. But, you know, for you, it's got to be the Note 7 stuff.
Yeah, the Note 7 stuff was
and that wasn't
big
this quarter, but it was last year.
That was last year, yeah. And again, like the RuneFest episode, that was really long. We were really tired after that, both of us.
Yep.
But we did it.
Yeah, because those RuneFest episodes, I get up really early to watch a bit of it, then I disappear for a bit, and then we come back and do it after RuneFest has ended. So it's a very tiring day here, because not only are we recording for 2.5 or 3 hours here, we're making notes on what was said on the live stream. I am chasing down people at RuneFest with an internet connection to call in, which I think we had 4 of them last year, which was pretty good. So,
yeah, we had a bunch of clan questers, gathered, I suppose. So,
yeah. Alrighty, well, thank you, Wolfie, for that one. RSVP update does indeed have a place in history for that. All right, if you guys want to send your own questions in for our new co-host next week, you can visit update.rsbnb.com/ask, or you can reach us at 571-57BNB, which is 571-572-2632.
Okay, you're not gonna slip. You're not gonna slip up this time.
No, I'm not gonna slip up this time.
Say. I mean, I can slip up if you want to, but
I don't know if that'd be a good idea. Okie dokie.
You all have to see you next week.
That's right. So, tech news. Amazon has announced a new product called the Echo Look, and it has a built-in camera for style selfies.
So can I just make this scary in one sentence?
Please.
Amazon is bringing out a product that will have a camera that will capture you while you get dressed.
I mean, that's not true. That's not wrong. I mean, you could put it in a place where it can't see you when you're getting dressed, right?
Yeah, I suppose so, but you would put it in your bathroom, wouldn't you?
So basically, this is in addition to offering the Echo, which has voice capability and listening capability now, offers the ability to see you. It is going to be able to respond to questions like, Alexa, take a picture. Alexa, take a video. And for the second one, apparently, users will spin around to get a shot from all sides, and taking selfies while keeping their hands free. Video shot with a hands-free selfie stick can be recorded or viewed in real time. They're also debuting something called Style Check, which is a feature of the Echo Look, which uses machine learning to compare different outfit choices, awarding them with an overall style rating.
Yeah, so somehow I don't trust artificial intelligence to make decisions about clothing styles. Isn't this very personal anyway?
It really is. And, you know, for that reason, it kind of feels like an April Fools-y kind of post. So, and, you know, with that, I think ultimately what we got going on here is the next generation of what Amazon wants to be doing. Now, whether or not this is going to take off, I don't know. But you do raise a very interesting point that it could, if you put this in your bedroom and let it watch you get dressed, well, then you're sending that in.
Well, a lot worse things happen in bathrooms that you might want to have recorded as well. So.
That's true. That's true. Same thing goes for if you got a TV in your room with a Kinect associated with it from an Xbox.
Yeah, so. Okay, yeah. I suppose it takes that role. And I mean, this is something you have to be careful with. But the same with, like, say, the Amazon Echo, the Amazon Dot, or the Google Home. Like, they all sort of are in your living room and sort of capturing what's going on. I don't know. A camera feels like it's sort of breaking a barrier for me.
Like, yeah.
Maybe it's very personal, but a microphone is one thing, but a camera feels...
I mean, it certainly looks like it's being sold as a style product. It's only $20 more than the standard Echo. So they definitely are going to be wanting to sell it for a price that is achievable for most people. So there's that. Though, you know, right now I'm not fully up on the technology, so I'm not sure what the next steps with this could be, aside from using machine learning to determine what kind of style you should wear. You have any ideas on
that? You mean more uses for the camera, that is?
Yeah, more uses for the camera, aside from style check.
Well, hands-free selfies. I know that a lot of young people these days seem to care about selfies a lot.
Yeah, that's true. You don't?
No. Couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, same.
I hate them.
Same.
I hate them. Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, pictures, sure. But, like, how often do you take pictures at home? Like, only maybe to show off your outfit, which is what this thing will do.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, maybe in the future it will be able to pick up certain gestures. But
maybe.
That would be really far off. That would be more Kinect.
Yeah, and, you know, Microsoft has scaled back on the Kinect gesture stuff, so.
I doubt it's really going to work that well. Like, what would you do, and what would the response be?
I don't know, but...
I mean, the only thing which might work in the really far future is that it's able to figure out the... what's the word for it? Like, gesturing language.
Sign language?
Sign language, and sort of...
Let people use sign language talk to them?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then, like, turn it into voice somehow, or text. But that seems technological still a while away to do that.
Yeah.
Persistently. But that might be a next use, of course.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is just to let Amazon sell clothes.
I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, it's Amazon after all.
Yep.
But yeah.
Okie dokie. Next up, Waymo introduces early rider program for self-driving cars. So what's this about?
So Waymo is a Alphabet daughter company. So it's a sister company of Google. And they do all the self-driving car stuff. And they have apparently considered the cars good enough that they are going to let consumers drive around in them. So there's an early access program or early rider program in Phoenix, which is somewhere in the U.S., I don't even know the state. Is that
Arizona, yeah.
I had it, right. Yeah, so Phoenix, Arizona. Basically, you can sign up and you'll be picked up by a self-driving car and it will drive you to wherever you want to go. So it's basically some sort of taxi service. The service is actually free right now, and the main reason they're doing this is to get more insight into traveling patterns, like what do people actually use cars for, or especially self-driving cars for, and see what they do. But yeah, I guess this is a pretty big step in self-driving cars, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, this is what everyone ultimately thought it would be, is that, you know, taxis and whatnot would be replaced, and you just call a car in, and there you go, you get a new car, and you're off to your destination. So this is obviously heading in that direction. You know, an interesting part of this is that I think they're doing it in Phoenix, and the reason for that is because it's a lot easier in Phoenix to get permits to do this kind of stuff than it would be in, say, California, where Google is based.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, I mean, and plus they have... it's smaller and not as congested, so it's going to be less work for them trying to keep safe.
Yeah, I mean, they have, I think, millions of miles on their self-driving cars by now. I think among all the self-driving car companies out there, these might be the best trained models by now. And I didn't see this coming as something like as being publicly available soon, but it makes sense that this is the next step because they have been driving around with these cars a lot and they seem to be doing the job. We have heard some problems with self-driving cars in accidents, especially the Waymo ones, but those were all minor incidents and could be fully explained as well, and the models have learned from that. And I mean, we are coming really far. I think we'll see proper self-driving cars before the end of the decade.
Oh, I was going to go further and say by the end of the next decade. Well, maybe then.
No.
Maybe then for when they come commonplace.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that by the end of this decade, self-driving cars will be in some places. It will maybe not be very widespread, but I think there will be actual places where you get self-driving cars going. I mean, we still have 3 years, and every year we make huge steps, so
yeah,
I'm confident.
Yeah, and I think people need to get rid of their fear of this, because you got to realize that a computer, providing it's set up correctly, is going to react faster than a human, so should be safer.
But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how many people are going to end up having a driver license, how that's going to change over the years when self-driving cars are going to become a thing. Because I have people my age, which is like mid-20s, that are like, I am hoping that I can hold off getting a driver license and the self-driving cars will come along soon enough that I can just go to that.
And in some places, I mean, transit is good enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, I live in London. There's a tube stop every street corner, pretty much. So, you don't even want a car here. But, say, the US is really car-focused. So, I mean, self-driving cars probably have a bigger use case in places like US that are very car-focused. So, if I go on a trip to the US and want to get somewhere, I have to rent a car.
Yeah.
And if you are someone coming from Europe where transit things are generally a lot better, there's less people with a driver license, for those self-driving cars would be a huge revelation. And yeah, I mean, we'll see. It's an interesting concept. I personally really like driving generally, but driving around in cities where everything is congested is not fun anyway. And I would be happy to let the car do that.
I think that makes sense, especially for the cities. All right. Well, final tech news story is something related to photography and the Google Pixel and researching how better photos can be taken with the information that smartphones provide. So this article comes from the Google research blog, and the first photo here is that... it was a photo taken in San Francisco at the Marin Headlands with a DSLR camera. And of course, as you'd expect, you get a nice image of the bay and then San Francisco off in the distance here. And you can see, the natural quality that you would expect from a DSLR camera. So the challenge was made, use a Google Pixel to try and create a similar quality of photograph. So basically... the sense I got from this is that with some proper processing and a tripod, you can come pretty close to DSLR photo quality with the Google Pixel smartphone. And Nexus 6P.
Yeah, they used both.
Yeah, Nexus 6P. I mean, these shots are, you would not believe, were taken on a smartphone. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's like a link to a Google Photos album in the bottom, and I just stared at that for like a good few minutes, just in disbelief that this is made with smartphones. And I mean, let's be honest, this comes at the cost of a lot of processing, right? It's a lot of time spent into putting a lot of frames together in Photoshop. This is not just clicking away on a camera like you would do with a DSLR. Right. DSLR. But
still, because it can be done in Photoshop, that means eventually we can tweak the processing on the camera to kind of head in this direction, right?
Yeah, and I think that is the message of the article. It's like, so right now we need to do a lot of manual work, but as long as we keep improving this process and make computers better at understanding what's going on, we can hopefully, like, over time automate this. And who knows, like, in a couple of years, you'll be able to take these kind of pictures on your smartphone using a really smart processing app. And I mean, some of these photos are like, there's a photo here of like just the Milky Way.
Yeah, the star
on a
field.
Smartphone. Like, you, how can you, like, I've never even seen the Milky Way myself because, like, I mean, I come from pretty urban areas in general, but like, how can you record that on a smartphone? I would never have considered that possible. And just some of these pictures look so professional. You would not expect them to be made with like a Pixel or even a Nexus 6P, which is really impressive.
And that was my first reaction with this as well. And, you know, I think one thing this underscores for most people is that when you are taking photos with your smartphone, there's a lot more going on than just taking a normal photo. There is tons and tons of processing that happens that you're not aware of, and that makes smartphone cameras so great that you're able to actually use them in the settings that you are able to now, compared to, you know, how they initially first started out a decade ago with the first iPhone. So,
I mean, really great. When the Google Pixel came out last year, it was the best smartphone camera ever released. I think it might still be. And that was not just, I think the camera is roughly equal quality to, say, what is in a present day iPhone.
iPhone 7 Plus.
Yeah, it's just the processing, because Google, of course, has a lot of software capability as well and a lot of talent around that. They just combine the good hardware with really good software, and that's what makes the photo quality so good. And we're gonna see. I mean, I think we're sort of reaching this point where hardware is becoming harder and harder to get better. But I think there's so much more to be done on the software end that, I mean, I think the camera on the Pixel was a big selling point. And showed how much demand
hence
there is
the name
for
of the phone.
Yeah, and also the demand that there is for that. And I mean, I have like an actual old fashioned photo camera at home. That must be like 10, oh, longer than that, like 10, 12 years old. That's like an actual photo camera. And then I have an iPhone.
Digital camera or film?
Digital.
Okay. All right.
And then I have an iPhone 5. Which makes pretty much better photos than that.
Yep.
And then I have a Pixel, which is incomparable with either. So, like, just, it's just so funny that I have a photo camera that's pretty, no, it's not that bulky. It's like a pocket photo camera, which, like, back in the day of like the iPhone, even like the iPhone 3 or 4, you would not have expected those to make good pictures.
The first real good iPhone photo camera I find was the 4S.
Yeah, that probably makes sense. So that's roughly the time where it overtook my photo camera. And now these things I have never been able to do with anything. But like, I took the Pixel on a vacation to the US, and the pictures I made were almost more beautiful than the actual landscape.
Really?
And then, yeah, no, I'm not making this up. Because, for example, I went on a trip around London to look for a new living space, and I made pictures of areas. And I looked back at the pictures at home, and it made such nice pictures with, like, huge, nice skies that I didn't even notice when I was out there. that I had to tell people who was telling about neighborhood that it doesn't look as nice as in the pictures. So, like, because of HDR and using HDR well, like, makes things so, so nice. And
right, and the normal point and shoot cameras don't use HDR.
No, and it's,
and that's what happens. Your sky gets washed out, or your scenery is too much, and then whereas the phones do all this processing manually or automatically, rather, to create a good quality image. So that's what you're getting from this.
Yeah, and it was just ridiculous. It's just looking back at pictures and realizing that, like, they're getting better and better at making things look natural and real. And I'm a professional photographer now, but
it certainly feels like smartphones can make people that way, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are courses out there that is like smartphone photography, like, you can learn to do that these days, and it's a lot of, I mean, I don't consider myself a photographer, but it is a lot of fun to take pictures. It's a lot of fun to think about compositions and that kind of stuff, and this sort of brings that to more people who don't really want to invest into expensive camera but can still get really nice results.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's all on your phone, so there you go.
You have it with you all the time anyway.
Yeah, and there's a reason the number one cameras on Flickr nowadays are smartphones. So.
Yeah, and it's not just, like, the nice quality. It's just the processing is so clever that, for example, we were driving in a car, and we saw a sign coming up that was, well, funny, so we wanted to make a picture of that. I took out my phone, I wanted to take a picture, and I noticed that I hit the button like half a second late, right? I checked the picture and the sign is bam in the middle because it takes a couple of frames and it is smart enough to figure out
what I want.
Oh, to
realize that's what you wanted.
Yeah.
And this was on the Pixel.
This was on the Pixel phone, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, and we had a couple of moments like that where we just had to get it out really quick, open up the camera and make a picture and then feel it's not right or blurry, and it just figures it out. So phones become really helpful in sharing things, in saving memories, making nice pictures. So yeah,
and the lesson of the day here is that you might think you have a good camera in your point and shoot, or, you know, you might not need a camera, and okay, smartphone cameras aren't that great. But in reality, for many people, smartphone cameras have become the camera, and with increases in processing power on the chips and whatnot and increases in sensor size, we're going to be able to slowly creep up towards this DSLR style of quality. Granted, it won't always be there, but we are heading that direction.
I mean, there's a reason that things like Instagram become more and more popular, right? We are sharing things visually more and more, and I think it's a good development because it's so much nicer and fun to do.
Indeed. Well, this is something we can all watch out for in this year's smartphones to come. I think Google releases new phones in May? Or summer?
No,
I know Apple is in the fall.
Last year, the Pixel was actually after the new iPhone because they made fun of the headphone jack.
Right, okay.
So it's going to be fall as well.
Right, I'm thinking of the developer conference in May.
Yeah, that's I.O. Yeah, that's happening in May.
Alrighty. Well, everyone, that's it for tech news this week. We're going to move on to Skill of the Month and other things right now. First and foremost, we do have a fishing Skill of the Month this May. So if you are interested in signing up, you just head on over to rsbnb.com/skotm, and you can sign up in the... I'm sorry, I said fishing. I meant cooking. Sorry, I lied, everyone. I wrote the wrong thing in. I was on the wrong skill. But it's the cooking skill of the month. It's the cooking skill of the month. We got the boring hunter skill of the month right now with GemAndy52 still in first place with 20 million XP, and that's bad is in second with 5.8. And there's your skill of the month update. It's been flat ever since.
Wow.
Alrighty. Let's go through some of these achievements, eh? I'll take about the first half then. So, Warrock got 99 attack on April 26th. Moving on to the 25th, we have Simbakuro with 99 runecrafting, Alone Fall with 99 invention, Xenon Ray with 120 strength. And now on April 24th, we have Wily with 99 magic, Letterman with 99 mining, Silver Wiz 9 with 99 fishing on the 23rd, Warrock with 99 ranged again, Senrab with 99 herblore, and Divine Quest with 120 dungeoneering also on the 23rd.
Then we're moving on to April 22nd, where we have Torugroi getting 99 dungeoneering, Grimy Toesouls getting 99 summoning, and Gloom Reborn getting 99 slayer, Fields of Hope getting 99 thieving. That was all on the 22nd, so we're moving on to the 21st. We have Warwick getting 99 invention, and Caralambo 7 is going to be my guess for pronunciation, got 99 attack. And finally, on April 20, we got Sanrap getting 99 construction and Serapyro getting 99 runecrafting. Good job, everyone.
Indeed. What a noob that Serapyro person is, eh?
Still hasn't gotten his max cape.
Hey, I haven't done that either. So let's not point that finger around just yet. Though I guess I'm not really going for it, so it doesn't matter.
I get to do it now.
Yes. All right. You have a pick of the week. What do you got?
Yes. So I've sort of been conditioning my listeners for this pick of the week, like all these weeks. This is the big climax. So you all know how much I care about mechanics by now, I assume. I think they make the game. I mean, I'm in a questing clan, which arguably is often connected to lore and stuff, but like I still think mechanics are even more important than that. And the pick of the week is a game that came out in 2013 and is, in my opinion, still the game that has done the best in marrying mechanics with story. That is, the game mechanics sort of play a part into telling the story to you. It is really hard to explain, but you have to just experience it. The game I'm talking about is called Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. It's available on Steam, but also on like PS3, 4, Xbox Store, that kind of stuff. It's fairly widely available. Just look for it in your console store. It's probably there. And I don't want to spoil too much because you have to just experience it. But you play two characters who are brothers, and you have to play it with a controller. You can play it with a keyboard, but it's really annoying, and you're just going to give yourself RSI if you try. So you need a controller, and you use the left hole from the controller, which is the left analog stick and the left trigger to control one brother, and the right analog stick and the right trigger to control the other brother, which sounds awkward, and to be honest, is a bit awkward to play with, but like once you get used to it, you can do a lot of fun stuff with. So all the mechanics sort of use this idea. You get a lot of puzzles, and during the game, you sort of get told a story about these two brothers. It only takes like 3 hours to play the game, but
I think that's fine.
It's like, it may not be very long. It also depends on how much you do exploring. There's a bunch of achievements to get on the way with like optional puzzles and that kind of stuff. But like it's like 3 hours you can probably get through it, like on average. And the nice thing about it is that you can do it in one sitting, right? You can just lock yourself up and just play it, which is what I recommend doing, because you really get sucked in. And I'm not one to get emotional quickly, but this game sort of like almost pulled the tears out of me at the end. So that is, it is really weird how it can do that. And I think it does that through the mechanics, because they sort of make an important role of the story. Like, the story is not just looking at and looking at cutscenes and what happens. No, actually playing through the game is part of the story, which is, I mean, we have seen these narrative games, right? Like, so for example, I think it's called Dear Esther. It's one of these walking simulators, which is sort of the narrative game in a more classic way, but they don't really have mechanics that convey the story. And then if you look at something like RuneScape, the story is sort of conveyed through dialogue, right?
Right.
So this really takes the mechanics and tells the story through that, which is something that has been done more since then, but I don't think they did it as well as this game.
Also, the graphics in this and the preview here look excellent.
I mean, it's made in Unreal Engine, right? And it, like, Unreal Engine makes it fairly easy to make a game pretty. And I have known some graphics programmers who are like, I just recognize that this is just default Unreal stuff.
Oh,
but
okay.
it does look stunning, and it does help. The models are fairly simple. What's also really impressive about this game is I told you how important the story is in the game, right?
Yes,
there's not a single English word in this game.
And so it's all based on what you see and what you interact with then.
Yeah, so there are conversations, which is in sort of like a garbly language, like compared to like Sim, what's the language, like Simish. Like,
right.
Or the
Wii people.
Yeah, like it's just garbling, and you can recognize words and people like calling out names and that kind of stuff, but that's all. So it's really impressive how they can convey a story that emotionally touches you through just mechanics and that's.
It's all about storytelling and interaction, yeah, in much the same way that the Ashdale quest on RuneScape was a different way of telling a quest. So
yeah, and I don't know if it's worth the full price. It probably is. It is pretty steep though. I think it's like $12 or something. But it goes on sale very regularly. You can get it probably for like $3 or $4 when it's on sale, and it's definitely worth just playing through. A fun fact is that I actually did part of my game research on this game. I did a game about narrative storytelling and compared the experience of this game with a version that didn't have any mechanics and interaction, which didn't have very conclusive results, but showed that the mechanics actually do help. So yeah, I hope that in my episodes here on the show, I got people excited about mechanics and that they are willing to give this a chance, because
it shows that it's more about storytelling rather than
it proves that, like, when movie came out, that was a huge revolution in telling stories, right? Because all the visual stuff. And this sort of shows that games have matured to the point where they can be used to convey important stories. And we have seen that in the past. We have seen things like Her Story, which has a pretty impressive story and that kind of stuff. But I think this was sort of the first game that made people realize the storytelling platforms that games can be, and sort of pushed games from their young child stage to like a mature stage where they can really tackle big problems, and even possibly in the future, big sociological,
yes,
problems.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, too many people just see gaming as a way of, mm-hmm, just like, you know, mindless entertainment, which it can, mm-hmm, be and often is. But at the, yeah, same time, you can have this kind of storytelling and immersion in it that it often becomes more the most immersive experience and most immersive story you'll find, probably second to the imagination that you get when you're reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you hit the nail on the head here, and it's a really great pick of the week that is not something we see often, but, yeah, it really highlights what's possible.
Yeah. So I mean, it's hard to sort of, I never really have like a favorite game. I find it hard to pick one, but this is always one that sort of crops up as like, this is probably the most memorable game I ever played. Like, it really touched me really deeply, and that's why I'm always sort of I want to share this with other people and see what they think. So I really recommend just getting it at some point. Don't look at any material that might spoil you. Don't think you can get away with watching a Let's Play, because that's just not going to cut it. You have to just experience this. Like, lock yourself up, just play it, and I have not heard of anybody who regretted that.
Yep. Alrighty, that's Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, findable on Steam.
And other consoles.
Yeah, other consoles too. So what have you been up to this week?
Getting gifts from a Claudia machine.
Oh yes, of course.
I have been trying to keep up with ports mostly, to be honest. I haven't had a lot of time to play, but I realized the potential ports could give in terms of like profit, and I needed to sort of refill my cash stack after invention happened.
Yep. So I get what you mean there.
I've been doing that. I have also like gone around and tried to do small completionist things here and there, but I'm running out of the low-hanging fruit, so I'm having to start to invest into tasks a bit more. But yeah, I still haven't really decided where I want to go with my character in game right now. Sort of want to get Taskmaster.
I think Taskmaster is great.
Yeah, except for Dominion Tower has to happen. I sort of want to get completionist because the list of requirements is really short for that I have left over. But it includes getting 120 invention and engineering, which are pretty big. While on the other hand, the Master Quest Cape requirement list is really, really long, and that's a lot of like book drops I have to get.
Yeah,
so,
and it can feel grindy.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to just swing back and forth between the two a bit, doing just whatever I feel like. And otherwise, just be bank standing and being social in the game. But
yeah, that's normally what it ends up being, eh?
Yeah, I mean, that's the main reason I play RuneScape mode. Like, I never really wanted to get max as fast as possible. I just wanted to enjoy the way there, and like just chatting with people is part of the enjoyment. So yeah.
Alrighty. As for me this week on RS, as I mentioned last week, I discovered that I don't have all the port scrimshaws, so I've been working towards getting those and, you know, refilling the cash stack and herb farming just to continue on with the 120 herb lore goal, which is still going slowly but surely. So there's that in RS. And, you know, I checked out the spring fair and whatnot, and some more Ark Island hopping whenever I get those tickets. That's what I end up doing, going to the Ark for invention. Mm-hmm. But last week, you know, we recorded the show, and both of them were out right on time, and then I had to disappear shortly after that. And what I actually ended up doing was I was gone for the weekend on a little trip to Calgary, because there they had an exhibit set up celebrating 50 years of Star Trek. It was called the Starfleet Academy Experience. So that was a neat little roundabout feature that they had at their Science Center in Calgary, and it basically focused on all the various aspects that you would find at Starfleet Academy and in the Star Trek world. And it was very interactive for someone who enjoyed Star Trek. And if you didn't enjoy it or you knew nothing about it, it would be a good learning experience as well. And the bonus on top of it is that it was set up in a museum setting, and they had exhibits there and props. And they weren't replicas. They were things that actually appeared on screen.
It's really impressive that you can set up an exhibition that's both accessible to hardcore fans and sort of, I don't know, people are fairly new to it.
Like, it was very educational, but at the same time, there were lots of things in there that you would only get if you were a fan. So it worked in that regard. So, and you know, it was just really interesting to see that something like this would come to Calgary, which is about 3 hours south of here, when normally we don't end up getting that kind of thing up in Canada. Normally that's only reserved for the U.S. So very interesting indeed. And it was a great experience there. And I'm glad I got the chance to go and see it. So that was last weekend. And anyone who listens to this podcast will know that Star Trek plays a pretty large part of the way things work on the show. And once upon a time, we did count the amount of Star Trek references we'd get. So anyways, that's been me this week. Aside from that, I don't think there's much else. We are heading into May. We don't know what May is going to hold, of course, for RS, but we do know we will have a new co-host next week for the month of May. And I'm not going to spoil that this time like I spoiled the past two. So with that being said, thank you, Sirion, for doing this for the last 3 months. It's been a joy. And
it was a pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Yep. And with that being said, to the listeners, thank you for sharing your time with us, and we will see you next week.
See ya.